The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Centre Parks. Families that go here, grow here.
It's just gone 9:28 and we're joined now by Mr. Todd Carmonica. Good morning, Todd. Welcome aboard.
Good morning, Ryan.
And a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you. I've been watching you since 2009. Huh? And I just realized that that's quite a long time.
That is a long time.
Chatting people up.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to start this by saying, because I know everybody that's listening already agrees with this, but you are really gifted at what you do. You are remarkably empathetic, and that is a quality that is missing in everybody who talks on television or the radio.
Well, because I'm Irish, I will just point out that they're laughing outside.
They're
this.
Not
they
laughing.
They're scoffing.
They're nodding
and
in
they
agreement.
Are, something, I've,
Sean
I see, I see,
and Kieran are, yeah. are nodding
no,
in full agreement.
No, they're putting their fingers down their throat, actually. One of them is.
Actually, they've stormed out.
They've stormed out because they think this is a fake news bulletin. Todd, you've been to Ireland so many times, but let's go into the movies and the writing and everything like that because there's loads of places we can go here this morning. I think we'll go with the most recent because you've just wrapped on a movie in Ireland.
11 o'clock.
Tell us all about it. What happened?
So yes, last night on 11 p.m. on the streets of Limerick with a giant balloon light over the church at Perry Square, we wrapped. I wanted to do Snow Angels, but I should have done that in Kinturk where it snowed on our set the previous 2 days. I'm actually coming in here with the dirt of Kinturk on my pants, okay. The dried mud of County Clare. So I carry Ireland with me everywhere I go.
You do now.
After you make a movie oh my goodness, been shooting this movie since November. You just run out of clothes.
Yeah.
So I'm just sticking with these pants till I get home.
It's a good look. It's rough and ready, but it does the job. And the film, tell us a little bit about it.
It's called God Spy.
Yeah.
It's a true story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was one of the very few German heroes of World War II. And he went from being a pacifist pastor to one of the assassins of Hitler. And in the process, saved thousands of Jewish lives. He's one of the great figures of the 20th century.
Wow.
There have been, I think, 10 books written about him. His books have sold maybe 30, 35 million copies. And on the Wall of Martyrs outside Westminster Abbey, in between Mahatma Gandhi and MLK Jr., is Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
No way. Well, I mean, I feel ignorant now because I'm a big fan of history, but this is a name that passed me by. I feel like it's a sin of omission on my part.
It's interesting. I don't have a direct line to prove this, but I think it has to do with Germany's relationship with the war. And he deserves a lot of accolades. In fact, every other street in Berlin is Bonhoefferstrasse. It's easy to get lost if somebody's connected. Bonhoeffer Boulevard, Bonhoeffer Drive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But his story would take sort of a national pride to get it out there. And I think there's a lot of shame associated with World War II for Germany, of course, for obvious reasons.
So they're reluctant to say, look, we found one, you know, the good German thing.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But my cast is primarily German, and all of them have been deeply touched by Bonhoeffer. They're taught about Bonhoeffer. And I know in America, he's quite beloved. He's really beloved in India. Gandhi personally invited him to come study with him and spend time with him in India. And he said no, graciously, but I need to stay in Germany and help with this rising tide of hatred.
Wow.
So he was one of Hitler's nemesis. Nemesis is that like Worcestershire sauce?
I was
listening earlier.
Yeah. I know the complication.
Komernicki. I can pronounce my last name, but nobody can pronounce Worcestershire sauce.
Are you a Nicky, not a Nicky?
Nicky, yeah, N-I-C-K-I.
Gotcha.
Actually, you know, we're watching about Ukraine here on the TV in the studio, and it's a Ukrainian name. I'm actually Komernicki from the village of Komernicki in Western Ukraine.
No, have you tracked that down personally in your free time or?
Yes, my grandfather was Joseph Komernicki from Komernicki. He came when he was a teenager, right before the Russian Revolution, and raised a family in Philadelphia, which is where my dad was born.
So, when you see what's happening in Ukraine, do you feel a sort of a blood connection to the story?
Of course, the tracing of the story for us is that I asked my dad probably when I was 8 or 9, where are all our relatives from Ukraine? You know, mom's side, but there's just the people here in Philadelphia. We must have relatives. And he said that during the famine that Stalin starved everyone, and over an 18-month period, all the letters from the aunts and uncles back home just slowly trickled to a stop.
Oh, that's desperately sad. Yeah.
So that resonates very profoundly in this ongoing attack from Russia onto Ukraine. It's so, it feels so personal and also so petty. Putin probably means petty in Russian, because such a small man doing so much damage. And studying the World War II history and seeing how Hitler was a small man surrounded by a growing chorus of sycophants, it's so important to stand up against that kind of tyranny. That's why Zelensky, of course, he's a flawed human being, but his fearlessness, like he said, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. And he's lived that out, and the Ukrainian people have borne that out. And you see in your country, Ireland's been incredibly accepting and loving towards Ukrainian refugees, which means so much to me. And we're trying to do the same in the States. This is how we support the truth and the good, and we have to. We can't, you know, we're talking about the spring surge and how do we support Ukraine? Will Germany give tanks? Will Poland give tanks? The world has to stand up. This is a moment that is, we're not watching a movie. This is in real time with all of the world and Europe right here under threat. So we have to have acts of political courage. Sometimes that's taking in a refugee family. Sometimes it's donating. But we have to be alert.
I've about 5 million responses to what you've just said, because you've gone to so many different places. So let me just touch on a few things. One, when we did our first Late Late Show, the TV show, on the Ukraine, when the war broke out, among the audience was a young man, and he handed me a book during the commercial break. And he said, I think you need to read this. And excuse me, it was a book about the famine in Ukraine and Stalin's famine. You kind of alluded to it. And I have not, to my shame, read that just yet. But as we're talking here, I'm going to make it my mission to read it, because we had, of course, the Irish famine, which caused so many of our, all those Irish bars in America, probably there for, because of sad reasons, actually, in their genesis, if you will. So that's one thing. And then you mentioned, you know, Cade Mila Fáilte, the 100,000 welcomes. And yet there's a bit of a very nascent march of unwelcoming behaviour happening now. And we've been wondering a long time as a country, would the right and the far right get a foothold here? It hasn't yet. But there's just a there's a spark of it. And that's where the good people have to come in. And that's where the like the film that you were making, we need good people to do good things to stop those little guys getting out of control.
We can't abdicate.
Yeah.
It's easy to say when we look back, it's like, well, how did the German people all fall in line? Or, well, they did it by looking at the meal that was in front of them, or farming their field or raising their children, but not paying attention to the threat, the global threat, and how it could mean by taking care of their family only, they may put their family in danger.
Yes.
We are part of a global world. We need each other. We have to take care of each other. If we haven't gotten better at that while we're alive, all these centuries, if we're still just looking at our neighbor as other, then we're destined to fall apart.
I'm bouncing completely because you're my guest this morning, and because you're responsible so much for the movie Sully, which I watched last night with Tom Hanks. There's a good person. Sully and Tom Hanks, but who I don't know, but Sully just had goodness in him, from what I gather. Is that what attracted you to that whole, I mean, apart from the fact that it's an extraordinary story, he lands this plane full to the brim of citizens in a city that had this very scary relationship with planes falling. As we know, we get to all of this now, and they were still in that jitters phase, I think, post 9/11. So talk to me about all of that.
The thing I felt when I met Sully after I'd been hired to do the job, it took about 30 seconds to feel that, yes, this man landed a jet
really?
On the river.
That small amount of time.
It emanates from him.
Really?
A certainty, a confidence. He aims really high in everything that he does. So you feel that. Everything's about best practices. He is a sweetheart, but he's also an Air Force guy. So he's a bit of a badass, but he's not going to let you know. But just you can just see how he holds his shoulders that he can take you.
So he wears it lightly.
Very lightly. And I also thought that Clint Eastwood was the perfect person to direct that movie, because there's something very similar between Clint and Sully. And I knew when the script was first sent to Clint, he said, why do I have to read it? It had been recommended to him. Everybody knows what happened. And I think the power of that movie lies in the fact that nobody knew what actually happened. And the post-crash survival for Sully was almost more difficult than the landing of the plane on the river.
the trauma, the flashbacks, the fame, all of these things.
All of those things. And also, we live in an era where we're so connected to technology that we will immediately disbelieve the human over the technological. We just say, well, humans are flawed, but AI, but this program that, you know, clearly. So even back when that happened 14 years ago, and as you saw in the film, because the computer said the engine was running, then, of course, the engine was running. Not an experienced pilot, been in the air for 30 years, knew what it was like to have both engines go. And of course, he was proven right. But they spent, I had 4 days to compress the movie to. It was 15 months, 15 months of investigation, calling him at all hours, calling him with his co-pilot and without his co-pilot.
Harassing him.
Yeah, I would say. Mm. And there's no transcripts for any of these calls.
Yeah.
And they would make him go over it again and again and again. Well, there's a reason that you go after somebody, and that's usually money. So nobody liked that there was a $60 million airplane that got destroyed.
Well,
sort of took their eye off the fact that everybody lived.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When they started, I forgot the enormity of that story. I really did. Because there's so much going on in the world, there's so much, our senses are constantly tingling, and if you like, I'd forgotten the enormity of that plane sitting there on the Hudson River, and the wing populated by, let's call them what they were, survivors,
yeah,
who were all heading off to play golf for the weekend, whatever, they're going to visit their mums and dads. And this pilot checking up and down the aisle, making sure there was no one left as the water came up. And you remade it beautifully, if I may say so.
Thank you.
No,
Mark,
I mean, that looked like a huge task, but my suspension of disbelief, perfect. I was there.
Well, Clint Eastwood's kind of a master. Yeah. So I went to school on that movie. Just being around him, I've been doing this for 3.5 decades now. But the first proper movie set that I was ever on was Clint's set.
Okay.
And I saw how everyone's supposed to behave. No ego, no yelling, no rushing. Still came in 4 days under schedule, $4 million under
what
budget.
What a pro.
Complete, and also one of the nicest people you'll ever meet.
In Clint Eastwood.
Oh, phenomenal.
So I've never met Clint Eastwood, but just as you're talking about Sully, Mr. Sullenberger?
Sullenberger,
yeah. They just named the airport. They're naming it after him. The museum, the aviation museum.
I know, where the plane is. It's great. It's
remarkable. So he strikes me, seeing as you spend time with him and Clint Eastwood, as there's a very interesting phenomenon in human beings, is the introvert. I'm intrigued by introverts. And I think there's few things more interesting than a really smart introvert. Few things more boring than a boring introvert, by the way. No, you know what I mean? So you get stuck with the guy in the lift and you're going,
That's on no one's bucket list.
That's on no one's bucket
list. I'd like to be stuck in a lift with a boring introvert.
I want to go swimming with boring introverts after a walk on the Great Wall of China. But you know these introverts in life who people kind of dismiss because they don't say much, but actually they're repositories of all sorts of things. They just will do, they'll do it in their own time. Basically whatever I'm not doing.
And they're builders, they're engineers, they're doctors.
Yeah.
They're making the world work. I remember when my parents, God bless them, George and Mary Grace, miss them terribly. Yeah. But when each of them was suffering from cancer, the question was, do you want the doctor who holds your hand or do you want the doctor who gets you well?
Yeah.
And there were some people that we came across that were not pleasant. They were shy or didn't really have the bedside manner, but they were so good at their job.
Yeah.
And so my dad beat cancer 3 times.
Wow.
And when he died of natural causes. That's because of fierce introverts that had done the work, that cared, and they showed their care in a different way. Of course, we need extroverts too. Otherwise, you and I would not be having jobs.
We'd be kicked out. But I love that expression you just used there, fierce introverts. That says a lot. But that's your ability with words. You're a word guy. You like word play and word smithery, if you will.
You said it's getting orchid earlier.
I was joking.
That was fantastic.
That was an appalling dad joke. It was a
pun. But it's not.
I can't
see,
help myself.
No, see, this is the problem. The problem is, and I have compassion for all people, but those who are not adept at wordplay have created this theory that it's puns and it's dad jokes.
Yeah.
And it's really in the French court, this people had whole careers based on jeu de mots, you know, by wordplay, being a wordsmith. This is fun. It's play. Some people can sing well. Some people run fast. And if your mind happens to click on the magic of language and turn it around like a Rubik's Cube, there's nothing wrong with that. You need to celebrate it more.
You need to be here more to back me up
every Friday for the next 6 weeks.
It's a new show. It's a podcast. That's what this is.
That'd be a Toddcast.
Oh, touche. I'll get my coat. Let me ask you about Elf on the basis that it is one of my all-time favorites. And it's tied up also with, you know, the fact that I watch it with my daughters every Christmas. And it's really, it's one of those beautiful, and we love the soundtrack and we love Louis Prima's Penny from Heaven. And we love him picking the chewing gum up off the subway rail.
Much of that chewing gum I chewed, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah. When we were shooting that scene, they just gave the producers a bunch of gum and we were chomping about 30 pieces of gum. No. And then we stuck it on that. Well, we cleaned the subway railing.
Oh, I was wondering.
But he still went all in. I mean, it was our gum. We had chewed it. He didn't chew it.
Oh, but that's because he's that kind of guy, isn't he? And
fearless. Will is fearless.
Well, he seems to be happy to make a mockery of it all and himself. When he runs into the coffee shop, you know, world's best coffee, and the lads behind him. It's all that stuff, that the innocence of it is just beautiful.
Well, it's difficult. I just realized, again, in making this movie, you rely so much in a movie on these little moments with extras.
Yeah.
And you're not auditioning them. They show up on the day. They're cast through a different office. And it's easy to have a scene fall flat, but that greatest coffee in the world scene really leans on the extras who you've not seen in any other film, but you adore in this scene.
This is it. They're dead behind the eyes. They're looking at him saying, call the infirmary or the asylum because we've got one. How much fun was that film to make? Or was it a chore that just looks beautiful?
It was not a chore. It was a lot of fun sitting with Bob Newhart, Papa Elf. He had all the stories. He was the extrovert. Will is the kind of comedian that's a little more quiet, but then he says two things at a dinner party and they're the best things you've heard in a year and a half. So,
you know what? I've got friends like that. There's Tommy Guns and Snipers. Right. So I'd be a bit of a Tommy Gun. Please, somebody laugh. And then another pal would come out and just... And he'd take the whole room out with laughter from one comment after an hour and a half.
That's Will.
That's Will Ferrell. Okay.
That's Will. And Jimmy Kahn, who we just lost, sadly, he, if we weren't rolling, was telling a long, elaborate story about Francis Ford Coppola. Yeah. So everything that came out of his mouth, people would just come around and they'd hair and makeup would be like, I think we need to do final checks. Like, no, we're good. Everyone's hair is fine. They just wanted to be around Jimmy and hearing the stories.
Wow. Just sitting at like fireside tales with...
100% with all these great actors.
And when James Caan, as you describe him in the film, he's the birth father, of course, of Buddy the Elf, and he looks at the photograph of the woman who is, of course, the mother of, the birth mother of Elf, who's no longer with us, Susan Wells. Tell me about that photograph.
Well, I'm married to the mother of Buddy the Elf.
Explain that completely and clearly to us, please.
So Jane Bradbury, Ireland's own, happens to be, by the grace of God, my spouse.
And she... is the photo in the photograph.
She's the one in the photograph. She's the mom of Buddy the Elf when he comes looking for his dad, yes.
Singularly, the best boast I've ever heard since I've sat in this chair. And is that Jane? That's Jane outside.
I certainly hope she hasn't left yet. Depends on wordplay is not her favorite.
Would she care to join? Am I putting her on the spot? Would she mind? I'd love to meet her.
I'd love her to come in.
Okay, great. That'd be great. Good morning.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Have a seat over here. Sorry, I'm off microphone. No, that's okay.
You want to go here?
Yeah, this is Jane Bradbury, who's married to Todd, comer Nikki, not Nikki, our guest this morning. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So you were born and bred where?
In Athy, County Kildare. And I lived in Ireland till I was 19, and then I migrated.
To where?
So first of all, I started modeling when my sister entered me in this Ford supermodel competition when I was 19, and I won the competition representing Ireland.
Yes.
Yes.
And
good man, Todd.
The trip was win a free trip to Orlando, Florida. So yeah. I was like, oh, that sounds lovely. So my sister took pictures and just like old camera and put it into the pharmacy to get developed. And there was loads of professional models. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to win this. And then I won. So
well, of course you did.
I headed off.
Can we tell the story about your family arriving late to the event?
No.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
come
that's
on.
The
I
best.
Have to tell
you. You're in Ireland now. It's okay. You're among friends. Safe space.
So she's at this competition. She wins, but her family arrives late. And she's walking out and she says, oh yeah, I won. And nobody believed her.
No, you didn't.
You did not.
Yeah, they were like, no, you didn't.
The most Irish response. You know, anywhere else is like, yeah, you did. Let's go
for
dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
How would you shut up? What are you talking about? You
yeah, exactly.
So you spent some time in Paris, didn't you? About three or 4 years in Paris, yes. Which from what I understand was lovely, but then got really boring.
I wasn't working in Paris and you'd spend the day, this was before the internet, you'd spend like 9 hours walking around all of Paris, tracing upstairs, showing your portfolio. They go, no, thank you. And, you know, got disheartening after a while. I had been to French Vogue about like a million times. They're like, you're here again.
Todd, we can relate to that. Yeah. We've been, myself and Todd. Bonjour.
Yeah, yeah.
Encore une fois.
Exactly. So I finally did end up working for French Vogue after. But I got a chance to go to New York and I was like, yes. And then, you know, I was just totally blown away by New York because, you know, Monday to Sunday, you're out every night. Yeah. Everyone spoke English. I started to work straight away. And then I fell in love with New York for about 20 years.
I'm sure she was going to say Todd there, but actually she said New York first.
That's okay. That's okay.
Because when you met at an audition, you didn't fall in love at all. I mean, that's what I think is real. What I love about your story is that it was just, it was all obviously good, but you must have known, come on, Todd, there must be something somewhere in you that said, she's just not like anyone else.
No, the best way to put it, this describes Jane perfectly. So we had become friends and I thought we were out on a date. And
you thought.
Yeah, I thought.
Exactly. Well, you thought.
I thought. I was misinformed.
By himself.
I was going to say, sorry, Todd.
But the genius of who Jane is, and I think this is something quite Irish too, is that she's so fully who she is all the time. Mm. She is without guile. You get Jane, that she's not pulling a trick. She's not shaping things. She's not pitching you something. She's just Jane. So when I asked her if I could kiss her on that given night, she roared laughing. She leaned all the way back on her bar stool.
How are you guys still together?
And this is 1998. And she just laughed so hard with that great, wonderful, horsey laugh. And then she said, I don't want to kiss you. We're friends. And with any other person, of course, I would have been the squash grape at the bottom of the boot. But with Jane, because who Jane is, we wound up talking for another hour. And it actually was the bedrock of a great friendship. And it's always the woman's decision. So months down the road, when she had come to the thought that maybe it could be her and I.
We call that her senses.
Yeah.
Go on.
Did you know?
No, I'm joking.
And it was, and you know, she knocked on my door.
Wow.
And so luckily enough, I said yes.
How old are your children?
13 and 10.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
So, you guys, I love you guys. You're great company. I had a feeling, because when I heard about your movie, I said, okay, I'd love to meet these guys. And then we were talking about maybe going down to Limerick to make it happen.
Oh, yeah.
And then we heard that you were happy to come to see us here in Dublin. So it's worked out. But you've not only matched my expectations, you've exceeded them. We need to hang out sometime.
Oh, thank you.
Right after the show.
If I wasn't working tonight, it's all right to go. We could just keep
go
going.
For some pints.
Go on. Yeah.
The crew was amazing in Ireland because we shot half of it in Belgium and then the other, you know, quarter in Ireland. And the troops were just incredible.
And did you say, was it your suggestion to Todd to film in Ireland?
Yes.
Well done, Jane.
I know.
Good on
and
you.
And then the Limerick County Council got us down and was selling everything. They were like, come to Limerick. And
well, you know, I get to meet some great actors on the TV show that I do regularly. And they always say what you just said about the Irish crews at every level. You mentioned hair and makeup earlier on, but also cameras. And at every bit of it, they said they're a pleasure to work with. They don't mess around.
No messing
And there's humour on set as well, which is great. Okay, loads of texts, but just very quickly, delighted to hear that Todd and Jane are with you. My brother and I had a bar in the London Terrace building in Chelsea, New York. Todd and Jane used to come and see us, and they were without doubt two of the nicest people we would meet every week. I've now moved home and I live close to the Bradbury's Cafe, Jane's family in Kildare.
It's the Hines brothers.
This is the Hines brothers. They just said, welcome to Ireland, Todd. This is how it works.
Well, listen, I got full body chills because here's what happened. When I auditioned Jane, it was her first movie audition in her life. And I wasn't quite sure if she was going to have the experience I needed for that role. So we had our first ever one-on-one meeting was at Hines Brothers.
And so we go full circle, on which to end our conversation this morning. So Todd Komornicki, you are responsible for this film that we're all going to go and see. You'll have to have a good old premiere here so we can go and
100%.
God Spy, and we can have the crack there for
I
sure.
I promised I'd give some shout-outs here to my Irish crew.
Yeah, so, please do.
Our camera operators were amazing, Fionn Comerford and Des Whelan. Owen, the focus puller. Tom McInerney on makeup. I loved making a movie here. We laughed.
Good.
We worked through the muck and the cold. We were on the top of planet Earth getting blown sideways, and nobody blanched. The hardest working group I've ever come across.
Owen the Focus Puller sounds like Thomas the Tank Engine.
That's the new show. We can do that. Following the Ryan Turbidy show, it's Owen the Focus Puller.
Owen the Focus Puller is going to work again. Okay, Jane and Todd, thank you for being here. And
yes, thank you
let's
for
do it again
us.
Sometime. We'll catch up and
That'd
see how we're going.
Brilliant.
Look forward to it.
Thank
already.
You so much.
6 minutes to 10, back shortly.